Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Stubborn woman.
Exactly.
Okay.
Because menace,
you
Martha.
Do it for your life, wouldn't it?
Just yeah.
Turn yourself
yeah, yeah, it might be nice, life. Wouldn't it?
You should just listen to you, shouldn't it? It's on.
It's just men fixing problems.
To the sweet sounds of Kevin Bloody Wilson, 10 minutes late because Samantha Richards didn't listen to our guest, yep. Dane Swan and Swanee. This is big because I know you carry Samantha and I.
Oh, yeah.
But now we've doubled the amount of best-selling authors on the podcast. Get in. Hey, thank you very much for
thank
coming
you.
In.
Best-selling. Well, that's your first misnomer. Look, I sell enough to yes. keep going to need to write another one.
Right. and slightly different to Dane's book, you tend to write your own?
Didn't you write your own, Dane?
Well, it depends what you mean by write. I didn't type it out, no. No, I didn't. I spoke the words, but someone else actually okay. Someone actually put those words into a book for me.
Well, I've done that myself, and you know, as Neville Cardis used to say of all those Lancashire cricketers who he quoted in his pieces, I put into their mouths the words that God intended them to say.
Yeah, so mine's my words. I think I'll get around to reading it at some stage.
Have you not read it?
Pardon? Well, it's me. Why the fuck would I read it?
In case like, it's not you.
That's true, actually.
Like I know every story in it because it all happened to me. So, yeah. I don't
what
watch.
What if they put a little spin on it?
Oh, I don't. I trust Martin with my life. Well, probably. I'm sure he wouldn't have done that.
Maybe
not. I don't think so. I'm not sure he would.
Probably would have heard of it.
This is not Seinfeld where Kramer takes. You know, where Elaine's boss takes
maybe
Kramer's stories.
If you're well behaved, I might get you one for Christmas.
What, a book of mine?
Yeah.
Oh, they're fucking hard. They're rare fine now. They're all sold. It's a rare, rare fine. Go to the op shop or something like that. You might have a bargain bin. You might get one for $2.
So I punched the air when I found one of Gideon's that was 10 years old when I found your old World Series cricket book.
Really?
Yeah.
That's hard to get.
Well,
that is hard to get.
I didn't know it was early 90s because I remember reading it early noughties.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
And I paid, I think, twice as much as what you sold it for at a bookshop.
It came out in 93, and they only did one print run, and it became so rare that it was changing hands for thousands of dollars on secondhand book sites.
Well,
I, of course, had no copies at all. I'd given them all away.
That's good, but it's not good, because you're not
getting
taking profits of those thousands of dollars.
Well, that's similar to some of the photos we've been sent of Dane Swan, My Story.
Yeah, no,
it's been from bargain places.
It's a clever title, that one. Yeah, it took us a while to think of it.
The one I like is My Autobiography.
Yeah.
Like, as though it could be anyone else's, like his or hers or...
Yeah, I didn't go with that big word. I just went with story. My story, I'm a common man.
Yeah, you are. Yeah. And things you've got in common, I just wanted to kick this off.
Go on, I'm always...
No, you two both immerse yourself in local sport.
Yeah.
So for people who don't know, do you still play?
I do. In fact, I came this way on the weekend, played a game against Burnley, just down here. My 30th year at my cricket club. Jeez. Not getting any better, but not getting...
Yarra?
South Yarra.
What do you do? Bat, bowl, bit of both, keep?
Organiser.
Point.
Yeah. What's a pointy?
Anyone can play. It takes a very special person to organise.
So, you know, I don't know if you know, but Dane's been immersing himself in local footy over the last couple of years.
Yeah.
For who?
How many clubs have you played for?
A few. I played for a few. I couldn't count them all. I've forgotten half of them. But I'll just give back to local communities that are in need of trying to raise some money. That's what I do.
Yep.
Yep. So, you organise the party pies, sausage rolls at the tea break. Organise thousands of people to go to local footy. Sometimes it's hundreds. Sometimes it's not many at all.
No. And when you say organise those people, you don't really have... You just turn up and hope that they do.
Yeah.
Assume that they will.
Well, you know, I'm out there trying to help struggling communities, you know. COVID fucked a lot of things.
Mm.
And regional towns was one of them.
Ooh. Yep. I'll get to that because you've got something else in common with Gideon. I'll get to that.
Yeah.
But firstly, nothing worse.
Good looks.
Nothing worse than when a very, very good guest comes in and lowers their standards to join us.
Oh, that's most guests. That's most guests. Every guest, yes.
And then you do the little tag at the end. So we'll do this right at the start, the reason Gideon's in. Gideon Haig, is it .com.au or .com?
I think I'm just .com, yeah.
You're just .com. Yeah. You're just a .com guy. GideonHaig.com. It is Christmas time, and honestly, what better thing you could do than get a Gideon Haig book for a friend? Ashes 2023 and The Girl in the Cabin 350. Are your two books?
Yeah, at the moment.
But you've got
that's true.
Most of them except for the World Series cricket book, plus.
Actually, I've given away. It's surprised the number of books of mine that I don't have.
Yeah, right.
But like Dane, you know, I know what's in them.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. Firstly, Ashes 2023. You were over there.
I was. Yeah. Yep.
I actually had a group of mates who went over there, and they said time of their life. Now, what's it like for an Aussie? Experiencing an Ashes campaign?
Well, it was my seventh Ashes tour, and over the journey, I've seen some really good Ashes cricket and some really bad Ashes cricket.
Mm-hmm.
Particularly the stuff here, like 2021-22 is probably a bit of a benchmark for poor series. When Ashes cricket's one-sided, it's so disappointing. Mm. But we knew this was going to be a better series because England were playing fantastic cricket coming into it. Australia were coming off the World Test Championship. So they were in prime form. It was a tough tour, you know. So Pat Cummins has ended up playing 6 test matches in 54 days. That's bloody hard work as a captain and key fast bowler. So it was going to be an ordeal as well. It was going to be a real test of Australia's mettle. And it ended up being a fantastically even series. Cricket these days is a lot of it is about momentum. And, you know, one team can completely street another team before you've had a chance to look around. But this series just kept fluctuating. The 4 test matches that ended up in results, all very close. Funnily enough, the one test match that was one-sided was the one that was drawn, the game at Manchester, because it was the rain on the last couple of days. And it was intense. You know, it was intense. It was, I think... Politeness restrains a lot of international cricket now. The bilateral relationships between countries are a little bit sensitive. But Australia and England can go very hard against each other and actually push things. They push things probably as hard as they've ever pushed them in my memory. And, you know, had recourse to the usual stereotypes. You know, Australia too aggressive, England too precious.
Whinging.
And for the week after Lords, I can't remember a week like it. Mm. In sort of public debate around cricket, it was fierce.
So,
over there.
So just a quick memory recall: it was obviously the dismissal, wasn't it? Dismissal,
yeah.
And the Lords members giving the gobble.
Yeah.
So being over there, what was that experience like?
I mean, it was hilarious because you knew that it didn't really matter, but it was also.
But
kind
it did
of,
to them.
It would. Yeah, well,
because they're on the wrong side of it.
Yeah,
well, it's right. The spirit of cricket is something you invoke when a decision goes against you. It was fascinating. Yeah, you live for those moments where kind of sport goes to that extra level, when all of a sudden you feel all the kind of the emotional and historic and cultural resonances of it. And everyone got involved. Everyone had a very, very strong opinion. It was interesting that it did kind of divide between those with a regular exposure to professional sport and those with maybe a sort of a more woundedly sentimental attachment to cricket. Like I can remember 5 minutes after the Bairstow decision, Mike Atherton comes over to me in the press box and he says, "What do you think?" I said, "It's out." He said, "Absolutely, 100%. Be out in club cricket in Manchester." So there was a sort of a consensus in the press box that Kerry had done nothing wrong, and in fact had actually been pretty clever, pretty opportunistic. You know, it's taking advantage of an opponent's inattention is something that's de rigueur in sport. But it just sort of, I don't know, because it was at Lords, which of course is the lawgiver of the game, because it was Australia versus England, it kind of just attached itself to every other assumption that the nations have about each other. And of course, you know, when prime ministers get involved, you know that things have completely lost touch with reality.
Would you, a cricketer, would you have done it if you were keeping?
Absolutely.
Yeah,
in a second. Yeah. I wish I'd been good enough to do it, because it's actually a pretty good piece of cricket. It requires skill reproduction under pressure. It requires observation and preparation. It requires game awareness. The number of times that you have to hit the stumps and you don't hit the stumps are uncountable, but he managed to do it. And it involved chance as well, because when Carey let go of that ball, Bairstow was standing in his crease.
Yeah.
It was Bairstow walking out of his crease that got himself out. And frankly, there was no reason for that to go to the third umpire. It was obviously out. I think they made an unfortunate hullabaloo about it on the field when I think anyone who had anything to do with cricket knew instinctively that Bairstow had made a mistake and deserved to be punished for it.
And I did a thing with Dave Byrne last Friday, and he said Kerry warned him twice.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Said, I don't know if that was an issue. He said he'd warned him twice, said, mate, stop walking out of your crease, and the third time, fuck off, you're out.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yep.
Actually, just while you've opened the door, what was your experience with David Byrne like?
Certainly didn't drink as many cans as he did on the plane to the UK, whatever it was. But no, listen.
Is it in Hobart?
Launceston. Me, him and Archie Thompson. No, it was good. Like, we didn't have, he was on a different table to me, but he's got up, told, he's obviously been around a couple of times, told a very... he told a couple of good stories up there. Cricketers have got the best ones. They travel around the world and they can hear. They've got so many different stories from different countries around the world. But no, Bernie was good. He was flying.
He's in his heartland there. Surely.
Yeah.
It'd be like you at Lexington.
I had to come on last when they'd been drinking piss for 4 hours. So I got the worst of them. But he was going to Bangladesh the next day. So he told me it was a lovely place. So he's looking forward to getting over there. But no, he was good. I've never met Bernie before. We all grew up watching him, and we've obviously all heard the stories of Booney and the legend on and off the field that he was. So it was nice to finally to meet the man.
We'll get back to the Ashes. So while we've opened the door here, who's the best three, off the top of your head, cricket speakers you've seen?
Oh, that's a good
question. So you would have seen heaps of them.
I have seen quite a few.
Do you want thinking time? I'll give mine. I've written down mine. I just happened to.
Yeah, okay.
Number one, Bill Laurie.
He's very good.
I'm talking about where the room can just smash the table in laughter.
Yeah.
Two, this one surprised me because I was expecting the old stereotype, Greg Ritchie.
I was going to say him.
Yeah, right. Okay.
I was because
in the guise of Mahatma Coates.
Well, here's the thing. I thought that's what he was doing. Right. But obviously it's...
Yeah.
But now he's turned the whole shtick around to say how bad that was.
Yeah, right.
And he's very self-depreciating.
Yeah, right.
And it's hilarious about... That side of things, and he was the unexpected one. And I'd put three, David Bumble Lloyd.
Oh, he's hilarious.
He is so funny.
He's great company too.
Fantastic company.
Yeah. And he's a massive fan of The Fall, who are my favourite band.
Right.
So we have endless discussions about how great Mark E. Smith and The Fall were. And he's serious. You know, he's really serious. In fact, we had a poll during the Old Trafford test, best bands from Manchester. It actually went around the entire press box, and The Fall finished second to Oasis. So I was pretty impressed with that.
That's good, Quinella.
Yeah, absolutely.
And just on that, on your writing, we're going everywhere here, but you actually remind me a bit of Bill Simmons from the States, who's been a pioneer in the podcasting world, for those who don't know. But his general knowledge of mainstream... what do you call it? Pop culture?
Yeah.
He's been immersed in his work, and he was probably a pioneer in the States in that area. Yeah. And you've done that since day one, haven't you? And it helps your writing.
Well, I don't really think of myself as a sports writer. I think of myself as, a journalist who writes about cricket.
Right.
I've written a lot of books about in a lot of different veins. I like getting away from cricket as much as I enjoy writing about it. I think you always return refreshed from taking a break. And I think it always benefits when you see cricket as part of the wider culture. I think there's a, you know, there's a emotional resonance that cricket has in this country that that goes to the very heart of what it is to be Australian. A community sport, yeah. Dane. You know how people will do things for community sport that they will not do in any other context.
Yeah, it's crazy.
They put themselves out of the way. They help one another.
And hours they put in the work, and it's all for free. Yeah. Well, and they could be home with their families. Yeah, it's incredible.
And we don't come together in many other guises these days. It's very easy for us to think that we can't change things. You know, political institutions, cultural institutions, religious institutions, financial institutions. It's very easy to think, what power do I have to change this? But sporting institutions, you can genuinely, you know, put your shoulder to the wheel and feel it move.
Yep.
You know, that's intrinsic to my 30-year involvement with my cricket club, creating a great place for people to be.
And back to how you put pop culture in, into the Ashes and so forth, is that probably one of the reasons a thing like a Bairstow or the English, the members, the Lords, going off, actually why it resonated to the wider public? Because they can relate to that a lot more than a great piece of bowling or cricket or batting.
And of course, it, as far as they're concerned, that's exactly what Australians do.
Right.
So, and you know, you can have fun at Australians' expense. Funny enough, the day after that, I was playing a game for a club called the Authors 11.
Right.
At Burghley Park. The prerequisite is you have to have written one book. So, Dane, you could play.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Oh, a little left arm tweakers in there. Yeah.
So I'm the one Australian in the side, and late in the day we get a wicket. We're in our huddle, and the next batsman takes some time coming into the middle. And someone in the huddle says, oh, we should appeal for timed out. And every eye looks at me. Get the Australians to do it because that's what they expect.
So the difference between the cliche of the upper class twat in the Lords members and reality and what we saw back here were upper class twats yelling at Australians as they walked in. What's the reality of the culture there at Lords and so forth?
Oh, look, it was a mob mentality.
Yeah.
It was like, you know, people egging one another on. And that can happen in any scenario. I tend to think that I had lunch a couple of days after it with a former editor of the Sunday Telegraph, who's also a Marylebone member. And and it was a really good guy.
Yeah.
And he was embarrassed. He was mortified by what had happened. He did say, oh, get in, you must understand that many of the current Marylebone members are in trade. In trade, no, not really our sort of people.
Right, they weren't born into
wealth. We would never behave that way.
As I said, you've got two books out, The Girl in Cabin 350. So
yeah,
I heard you speak about this on Jared Waitley, and you did a true crime pod where it was a little tester. Yep.
She play cricket?
No cricket quotient at all.
No, okay.
So I can do that. Oh. Yeah, but I can walk and chew gum.
Something else you've got to come with, Dave, the true crime genre? You're across that?
I was on Crime Stoppers. Don't write a book about me, do you?
But why does that... Well, actually, season one, you actually said to us to get the podcast going, you were prepared to commit a crime.
Yeah, exactly, if I had to.
Why anything is true ratings? Crime so huge in the podcast community and so forth?
Look, it offers self-contained stories.
Right.
It offers a beginning, middle and an end. Lots of stories are open-ended. Actually, in this case, this crime was a sort of a mystery for 70 years.
Did you solve it?
I think I've come up with a very plausible explanation.
Yeah.
But it only came through, doing the hard work to get in touch with anyone who knew a little tiny bit about
it. Can you give us a background of the story, or do we want
to... Okay, in November 1949... a steward on an ocean liner called the Orcades off the coast of Victoria, coming from Sydney to Melbourne, opened a cabin occupied by a young woman called Gwenda McCallum, and she wasn't there. And no one has ever been able to solve the mystery of her disappearance. Right. And it destroyed her family, as you can imagine. Yeah, her disappearance leaves a huge gap in any family, and actually had sort of intergenerational trauma in this story. Now, I came across the story when I was reading a book late last year by an Australian journalist called Michael Cannon, and he told the story of having met this young woman, Gwenda McCallum, tried unsuccessfully to seduce her, and then a few weeks later opened his copy of the Herald and there was her picture on the front page. She disappeared. And I thought, gee, that's a really interesting story. The only way I'm going to find out more about this story is if I write a book about it. So I set off on my trail, tracked down all the descendants, tracked down all the related public records, and put together an absolutely fascinating story. It wasn't the story that I expected to write.
Was everyone happy to talk to you?
Yeah. It was long enough ago that everyone was kind of intrigued.
Yeah.
Probably would have been difficult in the immediate aftermath. There was so much trauma associated with it. But now people wanted to understand what had happened. And there were lots of things that, you know, people had lots of little bits of information, but they'd never connected them up. And that's the privilege that a journalist gets, is you have that license to talk to anyone. So, I found it absolutely fascinating.
Yeah, and by extension, for the craft of what you're doing, to do an historical novel, is it a case of saying, well, I want to get from A to B, but I'm not sure what's all in the middle, and then you just keep digging?
Well, you never know what you're going to come across. You never know how you're going to do these books when you start. My rule of thumb is I simply follow every trail for as long as I can, as far as I can take it.
Yep.
And if in the end it leads up to a coherent story, then you've got something. Sometimes you can't take it any further. But I found some, you know, I found people alive with, you know, in their 90s who had information to impart on their story. And they were living really close to me. Now, who would have thought it? So, it was a great experience. I've done this quite a lot. I've just done another one that's coming out early next year.
Yep.
Often it comes, you know, you come across a story and you're just so intrigued by it, you have to follow it up. Like the one that I'm just about to do that's coming out in January is about William Carkeek, the Australian wicketkeeper of 1909 to 1912. Mm-hmm. He played 6 test matches. Now, 20 years ago when I was writing a book about Warwick Armstrong, I came across this little controversy about his selection in the Australian team, where one of the selectors said that he had no objection to Carkeek as a cricketer, but a strong objection to him as a man. I thought, that's interesting. And then there was a letter appeared in the Argus that said, we should be hesitant to throw mud at a fellow cricketer who has been unable to keep quiet the one indiscretion of his life. And I thought, what's that? Put it at the back of my mind. I'll get around to it one day. And 20 years later, I had a bit of spare time when I got back from the England tour. I thought, right, it's time to do that Carkeek book. So I did it. So it was, and believe me, it was more than one.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, okay. Very checkered it personal life. Yeah.
Well, lucky if mobile phones weren't around back then. For William.
Let's bring it to a lad of the modern era, because you've done two books on Shane Warne and both before his passing. How happy are you that you were able to do such complete books before his passing?
Yeah, I did. It's the one book I updated it when Warren.
Sorry, I'm
died.
Referring to the first one being. I considered the first one being at the end of that farewell tour, which I read all out.
Yes. Okay. Yeah.
Because
yeah.
it was a farewell tour.
He did dominate, didn't he?
Yeah.
He dominated every field that he bestrode. I feel incredibly fortunate to have had a sports writing career that overlapped with Warnie's playing career. I mean, what an absolute gift. You know, sports, when you're writing about sport, you're only as good as your material. And he provided the best raw material of anyone. I don't think anyone has replaced him, quite frankly.
Is he the best you've seen?
Oh, yeah. And I think the thing that appeals to me most about him is that, you know, when you were growing up watching cricket, playing cricket, people told you about leg spin. They said, there's this marvellous skill called leg spin and it's amazing. And you go, oh, yeah, sure, it can't be that amazing. Leg spin had this, was a sort of a cliche of the luxury that you couldn't afford in the 1980s. It was fast bowling in those days, fast bowling one test matches. And all of a sudden, Warnie materialises in the early 1990s, and lo and behold, Legspin is every bit as good as they said, and it's even better. It's even more amazing that a man can do what he did with a cricket ball. So it's almost like there was a Warne-shaped hole in Australian cricket before he arrived, and yep. I think there's been one subsequent to the end of his career.
Yep. And could you have – now you do a very successful – you have done with Peter Layla a podcast. Could you imagine doing a podcast with Shane Warne with all the true stories that came out?
Yeah, look, he's he graved great material.
I've just led you in there because Dane actually did one.
Did he? Right.
Yeah, his UK management wouldn't let it go to air.
Right.
Me, him and Joey Johns did one. Yeah,
could you guess why they wouldn't let that ever get out?
We did 2 hours of it, but I was the third banana because they've always so much better stories than me. So I just sat there and listened. I was like a fan. Thank goodness I've never.
Surely there's a bootleg out there somewhere.
I think his management have got it somewhere. Yeah, hand in the lock and key. Probably burnt them.
So. Could you imagine three more space cadets in a room? The fucking shit that would have been talked.
Oh, well, it was. Joey smacked 10 beers on a Tuesday morning at 10 a.m.
What did you see from the dynamic of two greats at the same time in McGrath and Warne? Because McGrath, and he is as good as Dennis Lilley or anyone else ever, and that's his record, just stands up for itself. But the unique part about cricket, I suppose, more than anything else, is you can be an individual in a team game.
So
what did you say about that dynamic?
What an astonishing constellation of talents in the Australian team at the time. You know, big egos, but huge capabilities, and some differences, but an absolute commitment to winning games of cricket.
Yep.
You know, in the end, whatever they felt about each other personally, their differences were sunk when they took the field. And, of course, in Warne and McGrath, you had two perfectly complementary bowlers. In that sense, Australia was covered in all conditions and they harmonised so perfectly together. You know, previously we thought of bowling partnerships as being, you know, Lillian Thompson or Truman and Statham or Hall and Griffith. But a fast bowler and a slow bowler as a combination, I think that's virtually unique.
Yep.
And they were both incredibly accurate. Like, this was fundamental. They weren't just penetrative. They enabled captains, even when Australia was under pressure, to exert some sort of control over the pace of the game. And going back to the Ashes 2023, I never thought I'd see the day where England scored at 4.7 and over in a Test series. Can you imagine? That would have been impossible against Warne and McGrath.
Oh, okay. I was about to say that scoring is logical given the T20 and all that. But, against quality bowlers like that, it's not logical.
Yeah.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Possible.
Yeah. Well, where do you rank? You seem like a traditionalist. What do you think of the Big Bash? And does anyone give a fuck about one day cricket anymore?
pretty good about the World Cup.
Yeah, I think Glenn Maxwell saved it from that innings.
Yes. He's made another 100 overnight in the T20. He's just an extraordinary talent. I do think that there's a lot of meaningless cricket played. A lot of bilateral ODI cricket is meaningless. Yeah. It's not leading anywhere. It's simply content for the sake of content. But, you know, it's hard to argue with T20 if you've had any experience of the IPL. I mean, that's just an absolute juggernaut.
Yeah.
That's richer than the rest of the game put together, that kind of 2 months of the year. Yeah. When the player auction comes up, I think it's on the 19th of December, the whole cricket world will stop to see who's going to get paid what.
So when they bid that money, does that money go straight to the player?
So a cut for the agent. But
so you can get $3 million.
What, 20% for the agent or 10%
for the agent? But the strange thing is that the IPL is so lucrative that the players are not paid a huge proportion of the overall. I think someone's estimated that the players get about 10 to 12% of the IPL's revenues. Yeah. Whereas in Australia, of course, under the contract with the CA, they get about 26, 27%.
That's about the AFL, too. About
so you have to think that cricketers, despite the fact that they seem hugely wealthy, and they're wealthier than they were in the IPL, they don't actually have the same kind of economic stranglehold on cricket in India. There's no player union, of course, no collective bargaining in India.
So you reckon a player standing up to Modi wouldn't probably go real well if you're New Zealand medium pacer?
It would be. I mean, the fact is that most Indian cricketers make the predominant money outside of the game, and that they kind of have to have an entente with the BCCI.
Could you imagine doing that, though, getting an earning outside of your
Absolutely. Well, I'd give Australia the flick if I was going to go make $2-3 million a year just to play for 2 months. Yeah. What do you think of the Big Bash? Is it too long or is it?
It's too long, but I think it lacks star quality.
Yeah,
and I think we've seen players will sign up for it, but as the tournament gets closer and closer, they begin to drop out because they think Australia, big country, lots of travel, lots of training, not much playing, and actually there are more lucrative tournaments elsewhere that are shorter that you can make more money out of. The SA20. The IL20 in the Gulf, that's probably where the next big money surge is going to come from. Cricket in the Gulf, in the UAE, and potentially even in Saudi Arabia.
Taking everything.
How have you seen both overall, but also from your craft, the explosion in the data analysis of cricket? Because I think on expected score, India won the World Cup and England won the Ashes, on expected score.
Well, I think America won the Vietnam War.
That's right,
on the same basis. Look, it's interesting to talk to players who predate that.
Yes.
And those who've been brought up in that generation. Like I did a book with Daniel Christian a few years ago. Now, Daniel kind of emerged in a period in the early 21st century, and he is all about intuition. He's all about feel for the game, and he's very quick to point out the deficiencies in data. But if you emerged in the game 5 years ago, you've been swimming in data from the very start of your career, and the temptation is to think that it's highly meaningful. I think sometimes it can become very confusing for players. Players play best when their mind is absolutely clear. If there's
agree,
it's like footy when you it's a simple game. You go and chase the ball. Everyone always said, I'm sure it's the same as the cricket. First instinct is your best, but then when you like, hold on, I can't go there because I've been told defensively I've got to run here and I've got to do there. Yeah. Then, especially at the top level, if you don't make that decision to go like straight away, you're half a step behind people. They're so elite.
Yes,
you're fucked.
Yeah. Well, where cricket's concerned, it's expenditure rises to meet income. As the game's got richer, it's produced more and more backroom people, more and more coaches, more and more assistants who need to justify their presences. So
now you're talking Dave's language.
Yeah.
I asked Dave what the best form of assistant coach was, and he said one that left me alone.
Yeah. And of course, in cricket these days, because you're playing in so many different teams, you're exposed to a great many more coaches. You'll have a group at your IPL club, a group at your BBL club, a group with Australia, a group at the National Cricket Centre. You probably have a coach that you went to in a junior level. I sat down with a first-class cricketer a few years ago and I asked him to list all the coaches that he'd received advice from in the previous season. It was something like 25. And I said, do they ever contradict each other? He said, yeah, all the time.
Oh, wow. So that kind of – and what about from your craft? Because I suppose, you've grown up writing about the game, grown up professionally, writing about the game. Mm. But now there's more information you can get to should you want it.
Yeah. Look, what I concentrate on is trying to produce something that isn't available elsewhere.
Yeah.
There's just so damn much content these days, and so much of it is the same. So much of it is mere duplication or echoes of what you've heard elsewhere. I think when I go to a game of cricket, I always have to think, people have already seen this by the time they'll have read my words. They'll already have a pretty strong view about the main points of the day's play, because it's the commentators, of course, who prepare the first draft of history. I have to do something that differentiates myself from the pack. And so I try not to listen to the outside world. Like, I'm not on social media at all. I pay no attention to social media. I try to make up my own minds. I used to be such a purist that I never even watched replays.
Right.
I finally kind of had to surrender to that. But I felt, you know, I've got this special privilege of being there.
Yep.
I have to convey a sense of what it's like to be me in this position, not something that you get from just simply watching the TV. I tend to think that there's a lot of sports writing now that comes through the medium of TV. It's people watching TV and transcribing what commentators.
So you actually go to the game, whereas actually sit in a box in a booth in fucking South Melbourne.
I find that really weird.
It's ridiculous.
I can't imagine how you get any sort of feeling for the drama or sense of momentum. A game of cricket and a game of football feels very different live to that which is mediated. Yeah.
Well, we're talking off air, but that's what happened. Never let accountants get in charge of that because they learnt during COVID. Oh,
they
you don't
sure
have to be
did.
There.
Yeah. They
no,
sure
no,
did.
No, you actually
yeah.
do.
You do. You do.
Who's coming out this summer, and is it going to be the cricket going to be any good this summer, or are we going to sit through three day games where we make 500 and bowl now for 400 combined?
Might not even sit through.
I think you've already got it.
Okay,
Pakistan. Look, they're an okay team, but they're no great shakes away from home.
Yeah,
I think there's another period of upheaval post the World Cup. You know, Pakistan cricket's always in danger of pulling itself.
Can we play there? Are we going back there?
We've been there.
Yeah,
we went there. In 2022, but they haven't been here for a few years, and we've got the West Indies again in the back half of the summer.
And then are they worse?
They've only got worse, frankly.
Okay, terrific.
And the reason is because there was the end of one future tours program, and it's now the beginning of another. So we finished the previous FTP with the West Indies, and we're starting the next FTP with the West Indies. People will go, "What's all this about?
Yeah.
Weren't they just here?" Well, that's the explanation. It's the sort of explanation only administrators could come up with, though.
A West Indies tour, that seems like that'd be... What is your favourite tour? Obviously, the Ashes for the cricket, but maybe just for not the cricket. Like, what's the... Bangladesh the best tour? Is the West Indies, South Africa, like New Zealand? Like,
look, India's a fascinating tour. India's just like nowhere else in the world. There's always a bit of a relief when it's over because it's just so, you're so inundated. Your senses are so overpowered. The pace of life is so relentless. And the importance of cricket is so much greater. You know, we think we're enthusiastic about cricket in this country. In India, they just take it to a whole different level. It's like they're discussing, you know, global geopolitics. It's massive. You have conversations about cricket in India of just incredible earnestness. And you look at yourself and think, it's just a game? But I daren't say that. So I love going to India. I'm going there again tomorrow night. It's always an exhilarating experience. Just to simply walk through traffic in India is an exhilarating experience.
Jump on a train.
Earlier this year, we did an overnight trip to Indore on the Indian railways. And it was just fantastic. One of the great cultural experiences of my life.
How closeted, maybe that's the right word, wrong word, a life would a Kohli or a Tendulkar lead over there be forced to?
Yeah,
do they live there? Do they live in India?
Yeah. I remember going to Tendulkar's house just to look at it one day in Mumbai, and there was like a crowd of 100 people out the front. I'm not sure he was even there.
Just on a random Tuesday or something like that?
Just people are fascinated by them.
Yeah, you'd have a solid-sized house, wouldn't you?
It's very tall. Very, very tall. Look, when they walk into a room, it's like, you know, you're in the presence of a rock star. I've seen, you know, certain cricketers over there in live appearances, and there's just a sense of ecstasy in the room. But that's where anything to do with cricket is concerned.
Yeah.
You know, I'm going to the Bangalore Writers Festival, and the crowds at Writers Festivals over there are just so enthusiastic. A Writers Festival in Australia, you look out on a sea of grey hair. Here it's just people having a great time. And particularly if you're talking about cricket, you know, you'll just get a huge... You'll get a huge cheer simply from mentioning the name Kohli. It's all you got to do.
Kohli or Tendulkar?
Well, actually, Kohli now. I mean, Tendulkar will produce a surge of awe, but Kohli, it's just...
Is he the best in the world?
Look, over the journey, he's probably going to end up that way. Yeah. For sheer versatility through the formats, you know, his ability to adapt his game to all three formats is unexampled, and his appetite for the game. Yeah. There's just so much cricket to play, and he's always there, and he's always being Kohli. It's just relentless. He loves being himself. What a great life.
Just reminding you, go to GideonHay.com for all Gideon's book, Ideal Christmas Present. Now, as you said, you're a writer who loves cricket. You're a cricket writer.
Yeah.
Right. So one of my favourite bits of writing of yours, again, I think you're a bit in alignment with Dane here, but you wrote it a bit differently. We'll go back to lockdown, right?
Oh, yeah.
Just let me read seven paragraphs.
Oh, yeah.
It is some memories of a bygone era. It sounded to me like Daniel Andrews conducted the same press conference 200 times, replete with abundances of caution, people working incredibly closely together, the instructions so full of qualifications, exceptions and caveats that one ended up feeling capable of nothing. Did anyone else try the government's COVID helpline? I'm still on hold. But of course, this was not the point. The standard Andrews press conference was not a public health message, but a political message. Dan good, Dan strong, Dan win. And it worked. Largely for their own partisan reasons, people bought the idea of one mast stroke after another that would follow the ritual hoisting of the Dan Yay pennant to the top of the Twitter mast for the choreographed mass salute denunciation of traitors.
Sounds very similar to my tweets.
Well, at exactly the same time, Dane tweeted out. Right? Yeah. And you're all about being succinct with your writing.
Yeah.
That's what Dane tweeted out. Yeah. That's September 6th. This motherfucker's really wearing on my patience. So Dane sort of got to the point. Yeah. But you were both of the same sort of...
Yeah, I feel you.
Yeah. most people in Melbourne felt us. Yeah.
Yeah.
So your perspective, couple of years. I mean, your mother lived in Geelong.
Yeah. And, of course, she wasn't able to see her granddaughter for 2 years, you know, because of Dan's ring of steel. it was just ludicrous. I think people just can't bear to think about it now because it was so awful.
I actually got a memory this morning when I opened my Instagram. I'd posted 3 years ago today was my first job back on the outside of COVID.
Wow.
But COVID things were still in place, so we actually had to go down on location in Mornington.
3 years ago, that was 2020. That's when we were smack bang in the middle of COVID, wasn't it?
Well, we were allowed out. Well, we went down to Mornington. Yeah. We had to all stay in a house for a week before we were allowed to actually shoot. We were shooting a car commercial.
Yeah.
And it was memories today. And normally I like share my memories, but I was so triggered by it that I deleted it.
My kids won't believe us in like 15 years ago, mate. 15 years ago, we weren't allowed to leave our house. We weren't allowed to have to be in bed by 8. I had to be at home by 10 o'clock.
Yeah.
We weren't allowed to go 5Ks. Like, you weren't allowed to play on the swings.
Or no.
The swings is my favourite. What about yours?
Oh, yeah, I saw the swings. I remember walking out the swings.
Yellow tape on them. It was a murder scene.
Crime scene tape. I mean, just, I don't even want to think about it now. Funny enough, I still do the walk that I used to take during COVID. There was this one walk that I used to take around Princess Park. Because we're not allowed to go more than 5 kilometres from home. And people talked about, you know, wasn't it lovely to go outside walking during COVID? No. I hated every second of it. And I refused to feel good. I refused to take consolation in how nice nature was or the great outdoors. This was a walk that was grudged for me by Dan Andrews, and I was damned if I was going to take any pleasure in it.
I used to literally leave washing on the like clothes horse purely because if I put it away, then I had nothing to do. So I would leave the washing in my room, in my house all day.
That's why I leave washing around.
Don't finish Netflix during it.
That kind of outwore its welcome, didn't it? You got sick of it.
Everything outwore its welcome.
Yeah. It was... Like I've worked from home since 1995, so you would have thought that I would have coped pretty well with it. But the fact that it was compulsory, not optional, made it an absolute misery. And my daughter was at school. They were her years of grade 5 and grade 6. They're really important years. They're great rite of passage
kids,
years.
Same kids, just terrible.
And, of course, it pandered to kids' worst instincts, didn't it? Because... Yeah. you know, if we don't prise the device out of their hands with a lever, they'll happily sit on it all day. Yeah. So, and I think they've still not unlearned those habits.
No doubt. Geelong, I mentioned Geelong, so you grew up in Geelong.
I did, yeah.
You're not associated with AFL in that you haven't written books and all that. What's your passion meter out of 10 for the sport?
Oh, pretty strong because, you know, I grew up in – we came to Geelong in 1969, so it was till 2007.
From England?
I was born in England, but we came out to Newcastle.
Right.
My dad had a job at BHP, and then he got a job at Alcoa. So we came to Geelong, and of course, you know, you get caught up in, because it's the biggest thing in Geelong, it still is. And of course, we didn't see a flag till 2007. Mm. And we'd sort of reached that, I personally had reached that stage where I thought, oh, well, I might never see a Geelong flag. It's okay. I've enjoyed football. It won't have been a life of complete disappointment. They have given me some happy days. And then, of course, they won in 2007. I was there, and, you know, my life suddenly felt complete. Yeah. Yeah.
How did you cope with that? Because I didn't cope real well with the Demons winning, but I was in my lounge room.
They didn't really win one, though.
I can tell you that the 2007 grand final, I didn't enjoy it one bit. Until about halfway through the final quarter. Mm. I thought, okay, we probably can't lose it from here. But, you know, the fatalism.
Only won 140 points. Yeah.
Did you do the Billy Browlers and have a cry?
No, I felt strangely vindicated. And the funny thing was that Gerard Whateley lost his voice. Remember that? In the grand final. So he had to cancel doing offsiders the following day. So I got the call late in the evening. Can you come and do offsiders tomorrow? And I went,
did you add a few?
With the greatest of pleasure. This will be no hardship at all.
Now, were you hosting?
No, I wasn't hosting.
Right, well, but, no, because Dane's sort of drifting into this hosting business now.
Yeah.
He's a bit further out of the game. Any tips for him?
I like hosting, actually. Yeah. I like hosting. I like making other people look good.
I like making myself look good.
Well, I think that people can tell the difference between when something's well hosted and when something's poorly hosted. It can make all the difference. And you can, with the best talent in the world, if it's not correctly directed, you know, events can easily kind of just lose their way. So there's a real knack to doing it. So I'd encourage you, Dane.
Thanks, mate. I'll give it a go, mate. Yeah, absolutely.
Yep.
Yeah, why not?
Sam's teaching you as well. Yeah. He's all ears, which is good. A lot of your stories aren't from about the Stars, even though you did warning. Mm. And I came up with a theory ages ago that just like Dermot, we've had here, and Dane.
Yeah.
For every one of them, there's actually 10 guys who are like the Billy Brownless when Gary Ablett was the best, or Damien Fleming when Warney, or David King with Wayne Carey.
The ones who've had to try.
Just below.
Yeah.
And they actually become very good in analysing media and articulating it.
Yeah.
Perhaps better than a lot of the Stars do.
I mean, you mentioned the cricket war, which I wrote about World Series cricket. The best information I got in that book was from the players who were just the next best level, because they had watched really closely what the best players did. And for sometimes the best players, it all comes so naturally they find it difficult to articulate. If you've really had to work at your game, if you've observed it really closely, and if you're kind of soaking everything up, then I think you become a brilliant imparter of lore and legend about the game. I had some amazing conversations with cricketers in that period who were relatively obscure, but they had, because they played alongside legends, they had never forgotten a moment of it.
What type of life-changing experience did Kerry Packer give them from what you were able to?
I think,
because it was ridiculous how badly they were being paid.
Yes, it was ridiculous. The team that, of course, he really changed things for was the West Indies. You know, the West Indies had been a sort of a semi-feudal cricket economy where I think the players got most of their money out of playing county cricket rather than playing for the West Indies.
Yep.
So all of a sudden, Packer realised that the West Indies are a potentially great attraction. If we put them together and we really professionalise them, they could lead the world. So in some senses, Kerry Packer presages that period of West Indies dominance. He is the first impresario to recognise that the West Indies are a great team in the making. And of course, they dominate cricket for the next 20 years.
And also what he did with World Series cricket was the start of so much great television all over the world, because David Hill was his guy who he brought in Fox the box score. Okay. Can you believe that? That it took, yeah. Sometimes the most simple things are, why isn't the score on the TV all the time?
Cricket changed more in that two-year period than it had in the preceding 20 years.
Yep. Yeah. And world sport ongoing.
Yeah. And, of course, it demonstrated to administrators for the first time that television rights had value.
Yes.
They were sitting on potentially a commercial gold mine. And, of course, now we have the IPL, whose last rights changed hands for $6 billion US. It just boggles the mind. Packer liberates forces that were within cricket that we're still contending with now. It's a bit like, you know, Cho An Lai, who was asked about the French Revolution. He said it's too early to tell.
Right. Yeah. So you're not at the Australian anymore?
No.
It's not 60 Minutes, but what do you want to say about that? Because I started subscribing to The Australian just to read your work.
Really? It's...
Without dabbing, lining
your pocket. Look, I've done it for 12 years.
Yeah.
And I tend to think that in Australia people hold on to media gigs for too long.
Yes.
There's just not enough opportunity. It's a pretty small group of people and they tend to hog the limelight. I don't think that's fair. I had other things I wanted to do in journalism and I wasn't going to be able to do them at The Australian. So sometimes you just got to take charge of your own career. If you want to make a change, you're going to have to make them yourself.
So I'm a nobody but behind the scenes, but I was blessed to be at the Footy Show for 9 years.
Yeah,
but I remember the day I just went, I cannot do this one more day. I've got to go.
Yeah, yeah.
Because sometimes, and it becomes like, what's the line at Hotel California? You can check any
time you can ever leave. Yeah,
but sometimes if you leave a big organisation though, you're out.
Yeah, look, it was entirely my decision.
Yeah.
I also think that, I want to be better. I want to be better year on year. I want to dedicate myself to my craft, just quietly. You know, it's not a big thing. But I had done the same thing. I had written 1,000-word columns for 12 years on cricket. I did them pretty well, but I wasn't getting better at them, noticeably better. So if I wanted to write in any other vein, if I wanted to explore other subjects, other genres, I had to make that decision myself.
And what did you learn about the podcasting space with Peter Lawler?
Look, it's fun. It's heaps of fun. Yeah. If you're working with someone who you enjoy working with.
Sorry about that.
Well, we've gone wrong.
Well, Pete and I had worked together for 10 years by the time we started doing the podcast. We sort of had got to that stage where we're a little bit like an old married couple. We kind of finished each other's sentences. And so to put the podcast on was actually dead easy because we didn't have to do any work. We just literally turned the recorder on and continued our conversation of the day. So it was fun to do it, especially when travelling, and as we did it when we were going through India this year and going through England later. We're temperamentally very aligned. We get on very well. We always said to each other that if it ever felt like work, then we'd stop doing it.
Yep.
And we would be happy to keep on doing it, but unfortunately the Australians are not happy for us to keep on doing it. Let's just draw a line under that, shall we?
That happens. So we'll put all the links on our socials and show notes and all that, but like I said, getinhay.com to get all your back copy and ideal Christmas presents, as they say.
Absolutely.
Appreciate you coming
in. Thanks very much.
No problem. Thanks, Ralphie. Thanks, Dane. No Thanks, Samantha. Worries.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi. This is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.